Kevin, and this is Making Grind. I started Making Grind as a way to get things off of my mind that I deal with as a solo entrepreneur and the owner of a development studio. I started my own freelance business last year at the end of October, but really didn't get started working on the business until January, just because at the time I had just quit a job, and I had some money in savings and kind of wanted to take a break from working for a little while. I had been working at that point for a year and a half at IBM, and that's a very common reason that people create their own businesses, is because they want to work for themselves. And so my path, I don't think, is particularly special. I did it because I wanted to have control over my own income. I wanted to be responsible for what work I was doing. I wanted to see, at the end of the day, the value that my work was bringing to a company. And the job that I had previously was IBM, so knowing IBM is a very large company, it's really hard to find that value chain that my work was actually going to. So I left and I started my own company. There's a lot of ways that you can monetize your skills. And to be honest, I didn't try just one method of making an income by using my skills that I learned through school and IBM. I tried a lot of different things. Some of them worked, some of them didn't. Some of them are still questions whether or not they're going to work. And that's okay. It's something that you need to know going into starting a business, is that it is okay for some things to work and for a lot of things not to. It's just important to make sure the ones that do work count. One of the things that I love about being a freelancer and owning my own business is that it kind of feels like in the freelancing space, it's sort of the wild west of business. You're dealing with sales, you're dealing with networking and building relationships, and there is no one answer to the question, how much do you charge? It's more about knowing that what you're selling is your product, and what you're selling is your product, and your product is your time and value that you're adding to clients' projects. So with that, it's more like real estate in sales and investments than it is like buying a consumer good like shoes or a computer. With my company's services, the company that is usually paying for my services, and keep in mind I do say company, not individuals, but that company is investing in my value so that they will get a greater value from that at a later date. That is to say that they pay me to build a product for them that they can sell for money to clients, or that they can use for some other purpose, but generally it's expected to have a larger value than the money that they're spending on it. So in that sense, like how a home buyer buys a house expecting the value to increase, whether it's intrinsically for them because it's a home for their new family, or whether it's a hard numbers game and they're a larger company buying some apartments or condominiums that they're expected to increase in value. But either way, it's someone who's buying something as an investment more so than a purchase, I guess you could say. So why are you an investment and not a product? Why is a freelancer's time or skill set an investment and not a product? I think the reason is that finding good talent is hard, period. Large companies invest millions, if not billions, of dollars in finding good candidates to fill entry-level positions. Those entry-level positions are then nursed for growth for several years with the expectation that one day they'll become a vice president that can help the company. That's not to exclude the multiple levels that this happens on beyond entry level. This happens for VPs as well, CEOs, things. A lot of different people. Finding people is hard. So as a freelancer, I've actually done a case study myself. I'm working on a product developed entirely in-house, but I'm not going to do any coding for it. I'm going to take a pure entrepreneurial role in developing this product, and I want to experience what my clients feel whenever they're dealing with other people. And one of the things I immediately realized was that, hey, finding good people is hard. I personally have run into other development firms and freelancers in this space just from networking with other people and trying to build my own network of clients and things. And even within that pool of people that I've met, finding good people to work with is difficult. So that's why I think the investment analogy works a lot better than a product, because finding a product is easy. You go to Amazon, you go to the website, it's really easy to find, but finding good talent is very difficult. What does this model of freelancing look like? You're saying, Devin, you're telling me that skill-based businesses are more like investing rather than they are like buying products, so how do people know how much you charge? Well, what usually happens is that someone that I know from either me asking or them asking me will have a product that they're working on and they need help building it. Sometimes they need design help, sometimes they need development help, sometimes they need help because they don't know what they need help with. And usually I'll have some conversations with them. Sometimes this will be someone that I've known for a few years, sometimes it's someone that I've known for a few months. But we'll start talking about their project and where they need help, and then we'll talk about ways that I can help them. And sometimes they found someone better than me, or like they know someone else who's more experienced that can help them, or they know someone else that's already working on the project. There are a few timing things that come into play, so if I'm available, if their project has availability for someone else to work on it, or if they have capacity, or if I have capacity. So there's a few different moving parts that come into a play, but assuming all of those things line up at that point, I'll get together a contract that says specifically what work I'm going to do for them and what work I'm not going to do for them, and then we both sign the contract and agree that that's what's going to happen. For me, depending on the size of the project, sometimes, most of the time, actually, I would say I've done a sort of fixed-based model where I kind of estimate my rough per-hour cost or per-day cost and then the number of features that they have and estimate approximately how long I think it's going to build and how long I think it's going to debug and how long I think it's going to set up the architecture for. And all of those things are included in the contract that we sign. And sometimes, if the project is small, we'll do something where they pay me like 25% up front, another 25% halfway through, and the rest of the 50% after the project is completed. And then there'll be like a month or so where I offer them some kind of warranty that their project's not going to break, and if it does, I'll fix it for them. For larger projects, we'll do still a fixed-based pricing, but maybe like a breaking the project cost up evenly and paying out every other week or every month, whatever works for the clients and myself. But I don't do any work for people until there's a contract signed. I will have any conversation they want. I will look at code sometimes, but usually once it gets to that point, we're doing some kind of contract. So yeah. That's the TLDR of making rent. Basically, any content that comes out after this is just more exposition on taming the Wild West of entrepreneurship and freelance business. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Devin, and this is Making Rent.